Man, the first meeting I have with some of the folks that are involved in the park, they look at me, he looks at me in the face and he said, "Over my dead body, will you ever do anything like that in the park?" And I'm like, "Oh, wow. Okay." The hardest part was I couldn't get anybody to take us serious. And we called all the trail builders up and they were like, "Wait, what? Where?" And because we can get all the funding in the world, if we don't have a professional trail builder to come in and do their craft, we're going to be dead in the water. Preston York from Flow Motion answers my call. He takes the call and I tell him, I'm like, "Preston, look, I'll pay for your gas. I'll put you up in a hotel. Just come look at it. You no obligations. Just come look at it." And man, Preston drives down and he looks and he goes, "All right, you guys got something." And, you know, not only did he take a chance on us, but he really taught the community some of his craft. What says Louisiana mountain biking more than getting an Instagram picture jumping out of an alligator's mouth?
Welcome to Trail Effect. I am your host, Josh Blum. Trail Effect is a show that dives into the stories behind trails, the communities that embrace trails, and the people who rely on trails as a way of life. The goal of this show is to turn the stories you will hear from our guests into useful knowledge that can be applied to your community while providing some entertaining and inspirational content. Guests on Trail Effect include trail builders, board members, community leaders, volunteers, and regular people who really enjoy trails. For episode 169, Toby Cortez is our guest. Toby is one of the masterminds behind the mountain bike trails at Bogachetta State Park, located in Louisiana. Toby drops a ton of knowledge in this episode through some incredible stories about how Bogachetta came to be, cutting through the red tape of what comes to making a trail system a reality, and what's in store for the future. Cooley Creative is the title sponsor for this episode. They design and build custom websites, as well as help companies with branding, photography, and e-commerce. Cooley Creative was started in Wisconsin, but is now based out of Bend, Oregon. Jared from Cooley Creative is a friend of mine. We've traveled together on multiple mountain bike trips, and sometimes he sends it. For more information about Cooley Creative, head on over to www.dudejustsendit.com. Yes, that's right. www.dudejustsendit will get you to the Cooley Creative website, so check it out. Cattle Mountain Apparel, the brand that was built by travelers, hikers, trail runners, and mountain bikers, with the motto of "Venture far, laugh hard." While I definitely use Cattle Mountain Apparel for mountain biking, Cattle Mountain is also my go-to choice for daily wear as it is super functional and comfortable. Cattle Mountain Apparel also offers a lifetime gear repair program with the goal of extending the life of their products while reducing waste in the process. If you ever damage any of your apparel, Cattle Mountain will repair it for free for life. By using the affiliate link found in the show notes or on the Trail Effect website, a small commission will come back to the Trail Effect podcast, which helps to cover the cost of expenses for keeping this show going. Now on to the Trail Effect with Toby Cortez. So how's it going today, Toby?
It is going extremely well. I'm on a little bit of a mountain bike trip, so things are good whenever you're on a mountain bike trip.
Yeah, you're at you rode Walden's Ridge this morning with Sorba Chattanooga President Mike. How was your Walden's Ridge experience?
You know, it was cool. It was the second time that I was there, and it was really fun to be able to hit, because the first time I was there, I hit like every trail once, and then going back and riding it, knowing the trail a little bit better, it was super fun. And Mike is just such a extraordinary guy. I love what he does for mountain biking, especially in the Chattanooga area, but it was really interesting. It made those climbs a lot more interesting whenever you had good conversation about, developing what they're developing in Chattanooga.
Oh, for sure. What are your thoughts on the layout of Walden's Ridge? Because I think I don't travel as much as I think people think I travel, considering how many people I get to talk to. But I think the layout of that place is so unique because it makes it so easy to navigate.
Well, it's not only is that it's easy to navigate, but if you think about it, they've got that the upper trails and the lower trails, and you can kind of slide them. So if you ride one down and then you can connect that one with another one, and so you can create these different runs. Spider Mountain kind of did that too. And so I really love the way that it's set up there. And, the trails are super fun. And being able to combine different runs on different routes was really, that's a pretty cool way to did it.
Did you ride any of the stuff that has recently opened since we met each other there about a month ago?
No, it was still closed. Okay. The double black diamond stuff. I wrote the top of it. Don't tell anybody. But I wrote the top of it last time I was here, and it was very, very cautious and kind of know what we were doing, and pretty exciting stuff for some double black diamond. The rock work is just absolutely amazing. It was really cool to see that rock work. It'd be exciting when they open it.
Yeah, it should be. And I know Shaggy was just there cleaning some stuff up and making the rock work even better than what it was initially. And so I think this stuff should be open pretty soon. It might be open even by the time we release this.
Oh, hopefully so. Mad respects for those folks to move those rocks and put those rocks in the way they do that. And I know a lot about that because the trails that we do, we have absolutely zero rocks and we have to import every single one of them in and put them in place. So I know there's a lot of work that goes into that.
Well, let's get into your trails. And even ahead of that, we didn't even do an intro. So here we are today on Trail Effect. I've got Toby Cortez. Toby is part of the North Shore Off-Road Bicycling Association, which is kind of an interesting acronym. I don't know if that's an acronym, but it's NORBA, which I've started mountain biking in the days of NORBA in the mid 90s. So I totally laugh at that when I saw that.
Isn't it funny? I chuckled too when I came across it. I didn't come up with the name.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So more specifically, he's, one of the people behind the Bogue Chitto State Park in Southeast Louisiana. But Toby's also involved with or founded the Summit Mountain Bike Academy, which is a skills-based mountain bike coaching program. And then on top of that, like most people that come on this podcast, he's involved with a bunch of other things as well, such as being on the board of directors for the Southeastern Louisiana University Foundation. And I'm sure the list of things that you're involved with goes well beyond that. So how's it going today, Toby?
It is going fun. It's fun. It's fun. I'm taking a little bit of a vacation with my wife and my 18-year-old daughter and taking a small break from everything. But no, things are going well and it's fun moving the needle. I definitely am involved in a lot of different things. And, my background professionally, what I do is I raise funds for public entities through municipal bonds. So I put a suit and tie on during the week and, fund power plants and roads, sewage systems and school boards, and had a very blessed career and wanted to start to give back. And so I've chosen the school, the university. Education's always been close to my heart. And then, of course, I've been diving and giving back to mountain biking, which has been just super fun.
Let's get into why mountain biking for you and what your backstory is into mountain biking, which is leading to what we're going to talk about after that.
Sure. No, absolutely. So born and raised in Louisiana, about 30 miles outside of New Orleans. And the two things that I loved to do was rock climbing and mountain biking. And I was absolutely in the wrong spot to do that, but I can't help what the passion was and started mountain biking. Whew, a long time ago, I had a bunch of bikes and then I finally got that Cannondale Super V full suspension. And I thought I was on top of the world. Wow. Did that suspension system not work? But Cannondale tried. Now, I think that was back in 94. I don't know, but
I would agree with it. It was right around then because I was into mountain biking at that time. And I specifically remember that bike.
So I put it on the back. I was still in college and I put it on the back of a truck and the mountain bike was way worth more than that truck was. But, I started mountain biking a long time ago and we would have these trips. We had a couple of guys that would love to go out of town and, we started to go to, Windrock whenever Windrock before a long, long time ago when Windrock was really, really raw in the early 2000s. We'd go to Snowshoe and man, we'd have all of these trips that were just absolutely amazing. But being from Louisiana, I mean, once a month, we were going on a trip to get some quality mountain biking. And, we did some crazy things, some fun trips, driving, piling 6-7 people in a truck and driving 10 hours to go ride. And, it's bringing back some memories. We used to take our fully rigid bikes. It was a Surly. Green Surly and had orange Chris King wheels on it. I couldn't remember that. And we would run them fully rigid and we would run them on our trails. They probably had, 100-foot hills and it was And it was whenever they built trails straight down the fault line, the water line. And so they would all get washed out. So it was kind of gnarly. And to prepare for Windrock, we would ride our rigid bikes back home to be able to kind of get to somewhat the same feel of an 8-inch full suspension bike whenever you rode it at Windrock. But so we've been riding a long time back home, and we had, you know, a little bit of a crew, and we would build these things that, man, we had these drainage canals that they kept on eroding away. So it was the same texture. It was the same soil as they do in Virgin, Utah. And so it was the kind of very mini. I mean, this was like 20, 30 foot high, but it was the same thing. And if you fell, it kind of was like, you know, you fell into some like powder. And so we would build these drops, and you know, we'd build them up to 10 foot tall. And man, back then, that was, you know, pretty for non-pro guys. That was a pretty big drop. And so we'd do that, and we would, you know, down in New Orleans, we have the levee system. So the levee, it goes up, and it's a little bit of a hill. And then on top of the levee, you'd actually have a retaining wall. So I don't know if anybody ever saw or can imagine what that looks like. But we took our mountain bikes, we put them on top of the wall, and we would, the wall's about 7 foot tall. And so we would jump off of the wall onto the little landing that was the levee. So we for so long, we made it work, and we traveled a lot, and then we just made some free ride things that, you know, kind of all kind of rogue stuff just so we can enjoy riding our mountain bikes. And so, you know, and I had my crew that, that did that with me for a while. And then, you know, a little bit about my backstory, my wife got pretty sick. And so I had to give up the traveling. Ah, man, it was crazy stories. And one of my best friends that I was riding with, after my wife kind of got well again, then I get a call, and man, the guy came off of his motorcycle at about 120 miles an hour. And we thought we were going to lose him. And I found out about that, went to help him out kind of through the rehab process. And we kind of got to be friends again through his rehab process. We started riding mountain bikes again. And we found this place that was only an hour and a half north of New Orleans that had about 200 foot of elevation. We're like, you know what? We could do a lot with 200 foot of elevation. So with the background that I had in doing public-private partnerships, we partnered with Louisiana State Parks and created Boca Chitta. And it's been, wow, it's been a wild ride.
That sounds like a wild ride. And like, honestly, when you started talking Cannondale, Killer V or Flying V, I can't remember what it was, but
Super V.
Your Super V, that's right. Cannondale Super V, which is a very unique bike. And then you layered in Windrock right after that. I'm like, I can't imagine riding Windrock back then on what we had for equipment compared to what there is now, because what we have for equipment now is so far more advanced than what people rode when it was 26 inch wheels and really sketchy suspension.
Oh, so my first bike that I brought to Windrock was a Riley. They technically had 8 inches of travel. And some of the original guys that were over at Windrock, this guy named Doug Ferguson, he cut a lot of those original trails. He would just make so much fun of me because I didn't know. I was trying to kind of getting into it. And the 8-inch travel, it actually traveled. We measured it. You could only get it to compress for about 2 inches because just the rest of it just didn't work. And so riding Windrock in its raw form with a bike that didn't work, I didn't know any better. It was always a terrifying experience. I mean, every time you got down to the bottom, you're like, you know, doing sign of the cross. It's like, thank you for letting me get down to the bottom. But it was cool. And it's been fun to watch Windrock and how it's evolved and how Snowshoe kind of been has come evolved. And now they've been having the World Cup. So those two places are really near and dear to what I grew up riding, kind of learned on how to downhill and stuff. And it's pretty cool to see what those places are doing. And it's going to be fun to see where Windrock goes. We're looking forward to going back and seeing the changes that have been made.
Yeah, for sure. That place has got a lot of runway ahead of it with what Aaron Gwynn has going on, it sounds like, and how he's going to turn that into, I mean, from what I've heard, at least, I mean, this is only through other information sources, but how he's going to turn it into more of a family friendly place so you can like actually get different users there besides users that are maybe at the tip of the spear in terms of skills.
It was so hard for us. We had, I mean, believe it or not, you know, I look back and I think about that. We were in New Orleans, Louisiana, and we actually had 10 guys that could ride Windrock. You know, you're right. I mean, it's the tip of the spear. I mean, we took a lot of people to the hospital going to Windrock, but you know, it's not approachable. It's not accessible. It is very elitist, and it's a beautiful place. But I'm excited to see, and you know, doing the stuff that I've been doing to develop mountain bike parks. That's been the secret sauce of the success is accessibility.
Well, let's talk about your mountain bike park. I mean, it looks like it has pretty much everything from paved pump tracks to drop lines to flow trail. I mean, you did it all in a state park, and you know, every state is different. You know, some states don't allow mountain biking at all in their state parks, even if they're really pro mountain biking in terms of what they have. You know, so let's talk about that process of like even just getting through the red tape of getting it into the state park.
We had like probably about 10 guys that they had about 3.5 miles of trails whenever I came. Rob LaDucier and Mark Chasson, those guys were just, you know, if they didn't start it off, I would have never kind of taken it from where they started off. But they were, they had had that we had, there's a lot of equestrians at the park. And so there was a lot of red tape. And I think what helped was that, you know, the background that I had, I knew how to speak government speak. I knew what they needed, and not only what they wanted to hear, but actually what they needed. So we have a tremendous volunteer base, and we had a lot of people around it that wanted to support it. And I'm like, you know what? This is going to be something that's going to be valuable. So I'm going to go ahead and dive headfirst. And so started talking to the park and started, you know, sharing the vision of what something could be. I mean, man, the first meeting I have with some of the folks that are involved in the park, he looked at me in the face and he said, "Over my dead body, will you ever do anything like that in the park?" And I'm like, "Oh wow, okay, what where am I going with this?" But I knew it was something that that could be very, very successful, and so I kept on pushing forward with the design, with the plan to come up, and you know, I came up with a master plan. I came up and I did the master plan. The hardest part was I couldn't get anybody to take us serious. We'd call them up, and we called all the trail builders up, and they were like, "Wait, what? Where?" And so, you know, I get it. I understand. I'm like, look, I trust me. I ride mountain bikes all over the country. We have something that could be significant. And so, man, we had all the list of trail builders, and because we can get all the funding in the world, if we don't have a professional trail builder to come in and do their craft, we're going to be dead in the water. So we narrowed the list down to five. I'm dialing Fado. I'm calling, and man, Preston York from Flow Motion answers my call. He takes the call, and I tell him, I'm like, "Preston, look, I'll pay for your gas. I'll put you up in a hotel. Just come look at it. You no obligations. Just come look at it." And man, Preston drives down, and he looks, and he goes, "All right, you guys got something." And sure enough, we were able to cobble the funding together, and Preston came in and did some flow trails. Thanks to Preston's with Flow Motion. I know you know him. He took a chance on us. You know, not only did he take a chance on us, but he really taught the community some of his craft. And so, like, he left behind some folks that are really, really skilled. We got one guy, Steve Scuderi, that, you know, he's taken where Preston's left off, and he's an artist. And we have all kind of crazy features, and it's just because of Steve. And Steve does an amazing job on building features. And Steve was one of the guys that I used to ride with at Windrock and Snowshoe, and we used to travel, and then we would come and we'd build in the ditches, these drops in the ditches. So Steve had a long learning curve of building what doesn't work, because some of those things were sketchy. But now we're both at a point, and with Preston kind of showing him some more things, really, we've been able to, with a huge volunteer base, been able to make something pretty significant at Bogachitta. And man, Preston was one of them that just really, he took a chance on us, did an amazing job. And we've been able to build on that. And it's been amazing, but it so Preston, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story with Preston. Preston calls me up. He's like, Toby. Yeah. And so Preston would always call me up, and I was kind of the one that just solved all the problems. And if this one or this or that one, I just kind of try to, I wanted to make it as easy as possible for him, because man, he was eight hours away from his home, and I just wanted to make it as easy for him. So, I'd always solve his problems. And so he calls me up and he goes, man, there's somebody jumping on my machine. And I'm like, what? And he goes, no, man, there's somebody jumping on my machine. And so sure enough, we had, you know, the some of the people that didn't think we should be able to build in mountain bike trails. And then we had actually one person that took it to the extreme and was like Tiananmen Square kind of thing, just jumping on the guy's machine. And I'm like, man, this is just not good. And so we've had to deal with all of those kind of issues building the park. But, you know, we got through those and we worked through those, and we came up with a lot of solutions that made the park something pretty significant.
So one of the things that I get asked pretty regularly on the side with this podcast is how to cut through some of that red tape. Like, what's an example or something that you could throw out there for the listener who's gonna, I mean, the stories you talked about with Over My Dead Body is a pretty common story. It happens, and I'm sure it's happened in all the states. I've heard it a lot up in Wisconsin, and it's something, and that resistance that we face is real, but it also provides enormous learning opportunities.
One of the things is that, you got to find your champions inside the organization, and searching out the people that actually they're fertile for understanding what you're doing. Now we really have the convenience that you probably can find somebody that works in state parks that's a big mountain biker. And that's, that's starting to evolve, but you'll have those champions inside the organizations that you really got to try to find. And then, you got to do things right. There's been a bunch of different groups, and you really got to put yourself in those land managers' shoes. And, they don't want a bunch of headaches. They don't want a bunch of problems. So, try to foresee what problems those land managers are going to have, and come up with the solutions before they even figure out they got those problems. And so, that's what you really got to be. You got to be the best possible partner. And man, that's not easy. It takes a lot of time and a lot of energy to be able to do that. But that's probably the one most thing that I would say is, find the champions, and then make sure you're solving their problems before they come up with them. What is the emergency plan? Really think through those issues that you might have. One of the things that kind of slapped me upside my head was the equestrian mountain bike mix. I rode, like I told you, I rode bikes all over the country, and I remember seeing horse trails crossing. So I'm like, okay, well, this must be a pretty common thing. So equestrians and mountain bikers, they get together. So we had equestrian trails. I was like, no problem. So this isn't going to be an issue. But man, it was a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of issue. We had started construction on the trails, and we actually had to stop because the equestrian population didn't understand what was going on. And I didn't understand how to really design trails and put a lot of thought into it with the equestrian. So if, one of the big things that came out of that for me is that, a horse feels threatened all the time. So you want to make sure if you're crossing, or if there's something where they can see the mountain bikers, that the mountain bikers are lower than the horses. And so the horses feel a little bit safer if a horse is higher. And it was like, learning things like that and then making adjustments. And we have absolutely made those adjustments at Boca Chica. And it's really, really worked out where we're working together. And now we're growing the mountain bike park, but we're also growing the equestrian piece of Boca Chica.
What's the size of that state park acreage wise?
So it's about 1,200 acres right now. And we are about to blow up. We're actually about to acquire, and hopefully over the next couple of years, we're actually going to be at 12,000 acres. So the park is about to blow up. It's really on the cusp of doing that. So we're working with the land manager, with the state parks, to figure out what's the best use of that. So with all of that land, we have a river that goes through it. That river probably is going to, we're probably going to have like 12 miles of the river that's going to go through the park. So it's a somewhat, I mean, 1200 acres is not that small, but we have 20 miles of mountain bike trails already in the 1200 acres that we have.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say 1200 acres with 20 miles of mountain bike trails plus equestrian is actually pretty small. And so to get that, to get those user groups to, you know, work together is a pretty incredible feat, really.
And we also have the Frisbee Golf. So about 4 miles of our trails intertwine with a Frisbee Golf. It's a beautiful Frisbee Golf course. And we sat down with the Frisbee folks, and we, whenever they were designing the trails, we wanted to make sure the trails didn't run through. And then the most common era throws, we didn't want to put trails into those areas. And it has been, you know, absolutely amazing. And to see all of the interaction between the Frisbee Golf and the mountain bikers has been really, 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 really good. You know, the thing that makes Bogachitta pretty unique is the size and the accessibility, because there's not too, you're never too far away from a road. So if you're a family coming in and trying to explore those trails, you always can get to a road pretty quick and just bail. And then the other thing that makes Bogachitta so accessible is the fact that we only do have, you know, 100 foot, 150 to 200 foot of elevation. It's not that intimidating. I mean, you know, I rode Walter's Ridge today. You know, there's not too many people that are just going to start that and want to do that climb. I mean, that's a long climb. So it really is making a pretty cool and accessible trail. We made a pretty cool and accessible trail for folks to come out and ride. And the neat thing, and really, you know, I did a lot of research before I dove in to Bogachitta. We're an hour and a half away from 1.2 million people that really do not understand what quality mountain biking is about. So, you know, we've been able to increase the visitation to the park by 50,000 the first year that the park was open, and they only had 75,000 visitors the year before. So we have a fertile ground to grow our beloved sport of mountain biking.
How was that received from state park staff? Because I could see that going two ways.
So the lieutenant governor in the state of Louisiana is over state parks, and there's not too many speeches that he doesn't make when not mentioning the mountain bike park. And it's a public-private partnership. Believe it or not, we did all of this. We did all of the park that we have with no federal grants. A lot of mountain bike infrastructure is being built upon the grants, all the federal grants that are coming. And we're definitely, we do need to tap into that. But it's all been through local dollars, corporate dollars, individual support, and then just a ton of volunteers. So whenever the state parks, they get that. They understand why they have what they have was because of the public-private partnership. And so they're making that known all across the state of what a success Bogachitta has been. So they, with open arms, they love the population that's coming in. You know, the guy that's over state parks, you know, we went. One little thing that we had a disagreement on, which wasn't really a disagreement, but you know, I wanted to build an 80-spot parking lot trailhead, and he was like, "Oh no, man, you got to build it 120 spaces at least." And here we are, 6 months after the parking lot's in, and I'm like, "Man, that dude knew what he was talking about, because we needed 120 spots for that parking lot." And you know, one of the things that whenever I came in and I designed the park is that they have a trailhead, and I spent a lot of time, you know, riding trails all over the country, and spent a lot of time in Bentonville, and thanks so much to Gary Vernon. He really accepted my calls and talked to me all the time. You know, one of the unique things that we have at Bogachitta is that we have so much packed into such a small space that you literally can ride all day and never leave 100 feet from the parking lot. And so I designed it, whenever I came up with the idea, I designed it to be a fair. And so we have rides at the fairgrounds all around the park. And we have the Sky Ride, which is a jump park that has all the way from Baby Line to Pro Line. We have a mountain bike playground that we call a little bit balanced bike course. We have a asphalt pump track that's called the Wow Mouse, named after everything's named after Louisiana roller coasters. We're about to put a skills park in. I do definitely want to talk about the skills park. And then right next to that, we have a dual slalom course. So whenever you come, it's created a space that's really, it's so cool to see mom looking at her kids doing three different things right at the park and right at the trailhead, and they don't have to move. And I think that that's one of the things that I kind of stumbled upon whenever we created Boca Chica, is that creating that community space where you're actually seeing everybody. I was talking to Mike today, and it's like, you know, the parking lot's full over at Walden Ridge a lot of times, but sometimes you won't see anybody the whole time. By creating the space that we did at Boca Chica with all the help that we had, you are interacting with people all the time. I'm going to have to send you the next project that I do. Boca Chica has a logo that has a roller coaster with a guy on a bike doing a roller coaster. I'll send you the picture of the drawing, but there's a guy that runs Backyard Trail Builders. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. So Seth is amazing. And so I don't know. I just fall into a whole bunch of different things. A mutual friend introduced us, and within a half an hour, we scheduled him. He's coming to Boca Chica, and he's going to build something. So I invite him down to Boca Chica, and it's pretty much the same reaction. People are just floored by what we have. It's not a mountain. I understand that. But people have just as much fun at our park as they do at a true mountain. So he comes and he rides the park, and he's like, this is awesome. I absolutely want to do something here. And so hopefully by the time this airs or shortly thereafter, we're actually going to be breaking ground. He's doing our skills park. And we came up with the concept. We had a four-hour coffee session at one of the local coffee shops. And we came up, we're actually going to do a life-size logo of a person going over a roller coaster hump. And so he's going to build that. And that's going to be the facade that you're actually going to be able to ride over. There's going to be a little gap on the other side, but you're going to be able to, that's going to be the entryway into the skills park. And then we're going to have four different lines that are built out of rock and built out of wood that you're from green, blue, and black. And we're going to go that down, and he's going to build that too. And so we're breaking ground on that any day now, which is going to be really, really amazing. And then the next thing right on top of that, while we're doing that, at the bottom of the skills park, and this is one of the ideas that I came up with, like whenever I was first designing it, and I'm actually going to be able to do it. I have a guy that is, his father built the flamingo at Disneyland's Flamingo Hotel. You know those big old huge flamingos they have there? And so I came up with the idea that we're going to have, you ever saw one of these alligators that you like put in your yard, and people up north maybe not know that, but they, and it looks like they're swimming through. And so there's a tail piece, there's a body piece, and then there's the head of the alligator. Well, the tail is going to be a berm. The body is going to be a huge roller. And then we're going to put an 8-foot tube through the head of the alligator, and we're going to jump out of the alligator's mouth. What says Louisiana mountain biking more than getting an Instagram picture jumping out of an alligator's mouth? So we're excited about the projects that are coming.
Yeah. And for those that may not be familiar with what Seth does, he built the Wizard or features it on the Wizard, which is at Howler Bike Park. And Howler has been featured on this show, and he did that with the McGills. And he's also, and I'm not fully aware of the details, but I know he did something last summer in Washington, D.C.
Oh, so the Smithsonian hired him.
That was it.
To actually build a trail on the National Mall. How cool is that?
Yeah.
So he did that. So Seth is with Backyard Trail Builders. His YouTube videos are awesome. So, you know, his thing is he'll actually show you how he builds those features through his YouTube channel. And just a great guy. He really does. He does an amazing job. And we're so lucky to have him come build something for us.
Yeah. One of the questions I was going to ask you, you've kind of gone into this already, is places that, you know, inspired you to do what you're doing down there. You've already, I mean, you've said Gary Vernon in Bentonville, so that's pretty obvious that you've been inspired by what's going on there. But what are some other places you took cues from?
You know, it's really crazy. I've been a 30-year mountain bike career, ridden all kind of stuff. I mean, I ride gravel, cross country. I did marathon cross country racing and did the XC racing and did time trials. And then lately I've been doing some enduro racing and, you know, I told you about the downhill. So really, you know, on the design side, we actually have a local guy that's done an amazing job with a trail that's outside of New Orleans named Eric Heil. And, you know, he always used to want to build the crazy stuff. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he tells me, he says, man, Toby, build something for everybody. And so I'm trying to see what they're doing across the country and giving folks a taste of that. And so, you know, definitely Windrock has played a pretty influential piece in that. You know, Oak Mountain and Birmingham has played a piece. And then Bentonville, what they've done in Bentonville, you know, whether you like it or you don't like it, it's absolutely very, very positive for mountain biking. They're introducing more people to mountain biking than anyone else. And you can't do that the same way that they've developed Windrock Bike Park. I mean, you just can't do that the same way. So I'm trying to take cues from all of that. And, you know, so we built the trails, and then I wanted to kind of get that, the Windrock feel. So we built a 13-foot drop, a vertical drop. I don't know, down in Louisiana, we measure it vertically straight down. And that was the first thing that we built. And, you know, 1% of the riders will ride that kind of stuff, but everybody loves to go watch it. But at the same time, the day after, I'm building the mountain bike playground to make sure you build something for everybody. And so, man, it's really been a hodgepodge of the influence that came. And then, you know, all of the different, I love going experience new trails, and I love going kind of figuring out what makes that trail special, what makes that trail system special. And again, we don't have mountains, but we tried to take that back and tried to give that type of experience, the best experiences that you can have on a mountain bike. It's really, really worked out awesome. I mean, if Christina Chepeta is actually from Slidell, Louisiana, and she lives in Whistler, and she came and she did a YouTube video on the place, and she was blown away by it. And she was blown away by it because we really do have pro level features. I mean, we have already right now, we have a legitimate slope style course that has some pretty big hits. You know, again, we're not on the side of Whistler Mountain, but we have something that we built that has some, if you're a slope style person, you would absolutely love coming and doing our four hits, which we're going to turn into six hits in a while. And that place that we call the Tower of Terror, that's a part of it. And that's the middle hit off that. And then we got a huge step up that you come in with all that speed that you hit after. And going into it, we've got an 8-foot drop, 8-foot straight down, but it goes down to 4 inches. So, you know, it's 4 inches wide. So talk about the adrenaline rush when you go off of something that big. It's not humongous. It's not a humongous feature, but whenever you put it down to 4 inches, it feels like a very, very big feature.
I was going to ask, or I was going to bring this up, because you texted me a movie poster and Christina Chepeta's name was on that. And so I was going to bring her up in that part of this, but let's talk about that now. So there's a documentary. You called it a low budget documentary, but I don't think we're going to call it a low budget documentary. We're just going to call it a documentary.
Sure.
It's coming out, I think, this spring on, I believe you said, was it Amazon?
Prime? It's going to be on Prime.
But it's titled Right Here, Right Now, and it's got Gary Vernon in it, right?
Yes.
And it's got Christina Chepeta in it. So you got some A-list mountain, I'm going to call mountain bike A-list celebrities.
So they did interviews for us, yes.
So let's talk about the backstory awesome. on what prompted the documentary.
Sure. Well, there's a guy, there's a filmmaker in New Orleans that was like, he wanted to do a documentary on it. He heard about the park and it's like, oh man, that would be a pretty cool story about, you know, it's really about, especially, you know, I'm 51, folks in our age bracket, you know, are they going to kind of hang their shoes up? Are they actually going to do something? Are you going to you know, learn to play tennis? Are you going to learn to play piano? Or are you just going to kind of kick back, relax? Or are you going to volunteer? So the whole right here, right now is like, you know, choose something and do it. And so they love the fact that it was me and Steve Scuderi, and we decided to go all in on volunteering our time to develop the mountain bike park. And then so as the documentary and as the filmmaker is going into it, he kind of finds out the backstory that Steve and I had been traveling, been knowing each other for 20 years. And there was some tragedy, and my wife got pretty sick for 7 years, and we were in the hospital probably, you know, 10 to 14 days a month for 7 years. And so kind of I lost touch. And then there was the motorcycle accident with Steve, and then, you know, the story of us coming together and actually building something that was pretty significant. And so who knows? Hopefully people like it. I agreed to do it because I definitely want to promote the sport, and I wanted to promote the Bogachita mountain bike course too. So, you know, we had fun with it. It was fun to do. And I really do think that it's going to be, I think it's going to be entertaining to, it's very hard to do a 60-minute documentary. I don't know if anybody's tried to do that, but, it's a 60-minute documentary, and, it's a long process to do that.
You know, you've highlighted this several times here, but most people don't live in mountainous areas, right? And it's awesome to continue to showcase that you don't have to have mountains to have a mountain bike community.
And that's what's really, really cool is seeing, you know, those 1.2 million people, they're starting to put their toe into it. And you don't have to have mountains. You don't have to have some crazy terrain to be able to build some mountain biking. That's fun. And one of the keys to building that mountain bike community is really that volunteer base. And I can't say it enough. I mean, we've got a retired teacher, Mark Richards, and he's at the park 2 or 3 times a week volunteering, doing it. And we probably have somebody at the park volunteering almost every day. And that's kind of what makes it work. So it's not only coming out and enjoying the mountain bike trails, but it's enjoying actually giving back. And we have a lot of kids that are starting to get involved, and their parents are starting to get them involved. And so watching that community grow, you know, it would have been awesome to just build a place that I would have enjoyed to ride, but building a place where we're really building a community with volunteers and families coming out and enjoying it. It's really been, that part's been fun to watch. And man, getting those kids off of the games, get off the couch, and getting them back into nature has been fun to be a part of.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, you know, IMBA's tagline, I guess you could say, is more trails close to home. And the more we can do that, you know, is good for everybody. And you said dipping the toe in the water, and that's, you know, that then leads to taking trips like the trips you were talking about early on in your, you know, when you were mountain biking, driving to Windrock and going to Snowshoe and all the other places that you're going to.
Absolutely. And I kid with Carrie Vernon all the time. I'm like, we're like one of your biggest feeders, because everybody is learning how to mountain bike, and then they're saying, okay, where else can I go? So people are, you know, they're bringing their hybrid bikes to a park like mine, like Bogachita. They're like, okay, well, wait a minute, I can't ride these hybrid bikes. I got to actually go get a little bit better bike for the family. They go buy a better bike for the family. And I mean, you know, 4 bikes at one time. So mom, dad, daughter, and son. And then they get their skills at a park. And then like, okay, where else do we go? And then, so we're very often sending a lot of people to different areas, and to Chattanooga, and to and to Bentonville, and to Nashville, and, you know, just the other different riding places in Knoxville.
That's the same with us where I live, especially this time of the year, because we're in that what we call the shoulder season or mud season. And so like this time of the year, you know, the upper Midwest descends on Bentonville because they need to ride, and right now you can't.
And what's cool about Bogachita is like we don't have snow. I mean, it snows every 8 years or something like that. We don't have peanut butter. We don't have that. So like, you know, November, December, January, February is like our prime riding time. So coming and then you also have the attraction of New Orleans. So coming and that's something that Bentonville doesn't have. is they don't have New Orleans right next to it. So you can go spend a couple of days in New Orleans and then come spend a couple of days at the park. So pretty unique thing that we have. And, you know, New Orleans attracts millions of people every year. So we take advantage of that.
For sure. So a topic that I like to bring up with not every guest, but a lot of guests, and I'm bringing up with more guests recently, especially, is what I call a famous failure. And I'm going to ask this, you know, not necessarily from a mountain biking perspective, but with you more from a business or life perspective. And what I mean by famous is not that it like hit the news, but like something that stuck out in your mind as something you had as a really good learning experience and was able to turn it into a positive, you know. So what kind of famous failure do you have, you know, business, whatever, like throw something out there, you know, to kind of illustrate that you don't like our best learning experiences often come through failures.
Yes. Yes. You know, professionally, and I mean, and it wasn't really one specific that comes out to mind, but I do remember, you know, growing my career, I used to hate competition, and you know, whenever I'm very, very competitive. So in my business, we actually go after a transaction. So we will pursue. We'll find out that somebody's, you know, going to do a new road system or do a new bridge, and then we actively go after that transaction of telling you why we're better and all that thing. And like, you know, early on in my career, I always had like a 2 for 10 hit rate. I mean, every transaction I went after, I get 2 out of 10. And so all of those, I mean, that's 8 failures. And every single time, you know, I always had to tell myself, it's going to make me better. It's going to make me better. It's going to make me better. And so through not getting all of those more transactions than I actually got was really, it developed some thick skin. And so, you know, that whenever that guy told me over my dead body, you know, I went back to all of those failures and I'm like, you know what, even though I have a failure, I'm still going to be able to go and still be able to succeed. So it was all of those failures. It just wasn't one, but it was one after the other, after the other, after the other of, you know, failing of not getting those transactions. And it took years before I got my hit rate much, much higher. It's actually, they actually put it in the movie. One of my biggest mountain bike failures was, you know, the golden rule of pre-ride, re-ride, and then free ride. We got that sign all over our park, and we were shooting for the movie. And we had a drone pilot and he was a couple of feet off. And so like, you know, you're kind of just feeling it. And sure enough, I was riding at a park and they had a long and low is what they call. They call those features, which, you know, you gotta be going stupid fast and you gotta huck them to be able to get to the other side. And I didn't pre-ride it. I was probably hitting about 35 miles an hour. And I just saw the other end. I was like, I don't have the speed for this. I tried to pull up at the last minute. That didn't work. I went over the bars and I front wheel cased the backside of the lander, and it flew me probably about 60 feet in the air. And so that was definitely one of my famous fails. It just reiterates, you know, we have these rules for a reason. And sure enough, I mean, I went back and I hit it. But definitely pre-ride, re-ride, and then you can pre-ride. Man, that they do that for a reason.
So did the drone operator get that like fully filmed? So it's going to be like in the movie to see you fly 60 feet?
In 120 frames per second. So they slowed it down a lot. Yeah. Oh, man. And I don't know, you can kind of see I never had to have surgery, but I separated the shoulder. Ooh. Didn't break anything. I couldn't believe I didn't break anything. At the last minute, I tucked and kind of hit the shoulder and tore all the ligaments in it. But through rehab and no surgery, I was able to recover.
Well, that's good. I mean, you didn't really allude to the fact that you got injured because you said you went and hit it again. But I was actually kind of surprised that you didn't state that right away because that's a hit.
It was nasty. I actually taught a private lesson after that too. I didn't realize my shoulder was hanging down. I was like, okay, I won't jump, but I could still teach somebody how to jump. So I gave a private lesson after. Man, I even forgot who that was. But if you didn't like that lesson, come back to me. I'll absolutely give you another lesson. But was able to teach after that. drove 6 hours home, and then I went to the doctor, and they're like, you should have came yesterday, but you know how us mountain bikers are. We're hard-headed.
Yeah, for sure. So another question I like to ask people is, and this is, I'm going to preface this with, you know, I'm going to say you have to move from where you're at, and you could go anywhere else in the world. And this, I mean, this can honestly be like truly a make-believe place. What would your ideal mountain bike community have in it for ingredients?
You know, if you take the Bentonville environment and you dump that in, like, so the riding climate, the how many people are involved, the accessibility in town. And then one of the places that I've never gone to and I've never ridden before, and it's been, I've had two times where I actually had plane tickets for the whole family and I had to cancel them, is the Pacific Northwest. And that's where I would live. But make it, and maybe they have all of this and I just haven't been out there yet. I'm going to ride with the Transition folks. Those guys are make amazing bikes. And so at the end of May, I'm going to go out there and ride in Bellingham. And we're going to cross the border, go in Canada. And I think that that's where I would live. They probably have the infrastructure that Bentonville does, but that infrastructure that Bentonville does is that that makes it accessible for somebody who is actually on a hybrid bike. I mean, you don't even have to have a mountain bike to experience some of those mountain bike trails. So I think that Bentonville absolutely got it right on that piece of making it accessible. So having that, putting it in the Pacific North, and maybe I'll go there and they'll, that's the only corner of the country I haven't ridden. And I can't wait to get there. I'm doing it in 2 months. Ah, countdown.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things that Bentonville got right that a lot of people don't think about is the accessibility in terms of like on-road bike lanes and other like the greenway infrastructure and stuff just to get you between trail systems and to promote just active transportation.
Yes. They really did. One of my, so kind of what's come out of all of this volunteerism, I do consult on developing mountain bike parks, and I come up with making amazing trail builders, those trails, getting some notoriety to those trails. And I'm doing one in Ruston, Louisiana, which is about 4 hours south of Bentonville. And so the mountain bike bug is biting everybody. And that's the next project that we're working on, is they have a greenway already. And we're going to put some trails on side of that. And then they have a mountain bike trail system that they have. They have a college, so it's a college town. It's really got all the ingredients to make a really cool place. And a lot of people that are coming on their way to Bentonville gives them a place to stop. But, you know, that Bentonville did get that right. And we are using that model on some other developments that I'm doing. And one of the ideas that I have on the consulting side is to try to actually create, you've seen these golf courses that string together and they call it, I forgot what they call it down here in South, but it's the such and such trace. And you go ride these actual mountain bike parks. So we're actually going to try to develop that in Louisiana. And maybe we'll even include hot springs in Arkansas and some other places, but really get some quality places that is up and above. I mean, you'll ride some local places that we have, and you know, they're really good trails, but they're not nothing really extraordinary. Get a couple of places that we develop that's extraordinary, and then tie them together through a marketing campaign that will bring in, if somebody's doing a road trip, all right, these are the ones that you got to hit while you're doing the road trip. So that's kind of some of the things that I'm going to be working on in the future.
Yeah. I mean, mountain bikers travel, and that's a,
yes,
we've talked about it throughout this whole conversation on how, you know, you and I met in Chattanooga, what, 3-4 weeks ago, because we were both traveling.
Yes. Yes.
And that was just a total pure coincidence, having, you know, we just happened to be in the same parking lot at the same time. And you had overheard Mike talking about some future trails at Walden's Ridge. And you're like, hey, what's going on?
Yes. Always got an interest in that.
Yeah. It's such an awesome thing. And just yesterday I was up in Northern Minnesota for some work, and they have a similar thing going on up in Northern Minnesota where they have a marketing campaign called Ride the Range. And it's these old iron mining communities that, well, where I was yesterday, there's actually still active iron mining going on, but it's these iron mining communities that are now leaning on mountain biking, you know, to revitalize their communities and keep, you know, money coming into them. Right.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's the marketing side is something that I've really, really focused on, because if you build the world-class trails and you don't put, you know, I call them front doors. If you don't put something significant, you know, whenever this place in Ruston, you know, they spent just as much money. It's called Lincoln Parish Park on the hub. So we came up and we designed a hub that is the world's first hub with a waterfall that's coming off of it. So we put a waterfall on a hub, looks a lot like the castle, and we definitely borrowed, but we borrowed and we made better. And so the buzz that is created, people don't even mountain bike, and they look at the hub and they're like, wait a minute, what is that? They want to go walk on side of it. So it creates a lot of excitement. And so, you know, there was a world-class trail builder that built the trails. But if we don't have something that actually is really significant to have that front door, you know, that alligator that I talked about earlier, that's going to be another thing that says, you know, if you see somebody took the creative juices and they took the time to create that, you're like, they probably got some pretty cool trails too. So, and then the next step that I really see with mountain biking is, I mean, you know, everybody's taking a drone and they're flying the drones, but I partnered with some guys that have done some cinematic movies, and they actually had some movies on Netflix, and we're really taking a cinematic approach to advertising these trails and really getting the feel of what it feels like to mountain bike and what the experience is. And so we were doing that, and we're working with the visitor bureaus to create marketing campaigns that are meaningful. So you have somebody that understands mountain biking. You have somebody that understands true cinematography. It's not putting a GoPro on, true cinematography. And you're coupling that all of that together to create a real marketing plan that works and that promotes trails. And so, you know, the hardcore riders, you make a clip for the hardcore riders, and the family riders, you make a clip for the family riders, and you make it all cinematic. It really works for creating a lot of buzz for our sport and for these destinations.
You just said cinematic. Yeah. Cinematic.
Yes. Is that a word? I hope it is.
It's a word. We're not, I don't think we're pulling any GWs today where we're making up words. Some people might get that joke. And I might totally cut this next question out because it just popped in my mind. Cause you said cinematic and you said Netflix, and this doesn't have anything to do with trail communities, but it has everything to do with Netflix and cinematics. And that is a series. And I don't know if you've watched the series. We don't know each other that well, but the Formula One series, Drive to Survive.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just now watching season 6. I just got into it this week. You know, I'm a little bit behind, but if we could somehow figure out, and this is now going on to the racing side of things, so this is totally different than this whole conversation we've had, but if we could somehow figure out how to pull off that quality of cinematics in a docuseries for mountain bike racing, maybe specifically be downhill, because that's, I mean, it's on the rise again. It was, you know, it was big back in the days of Norba.
Yes.
How awesome would that be?
Oh my. I mean, you hit on another passion that I have. I actually have like a $20,000 simulator at my house with the VR goggles. And I race the race courses before the Formula One race. So all week I'm racing Monaco, a Spa, or Silverstone. I'm racing those races. So I absolutely love Formula One and what Netflix has done for Formula One to get it back. Cause now, I mean, we barely, they had, you know, the race, the Formula One race was in Indianapolis and they canceled it 1 year. And so now what it's done for Formula One, what's that done for Formula One? If you think about it, they now have races in Austin, Miami, and Las Vegas. And if you've never seen a race, watch the race at Las Vegas. It is absolutely amazing. 215 miles an hour going through the strip. It's cool. But to back to your point is that they really did a good job of making it cinematic. And that is really on a very small scale of what I think we're on to something. And I think the folks that I'm working with, Digital Craft Show out of Mobile, Alabama, I think we're on to something of how to promote mountain biking and not just make it, you know, not just the GoPro or the big hit, because the small things that you do are fun too. And so like, but I would love to do something. I mean, you know, Red Bull got rid of, or they're no longer doing the UCI I don't think it's the same anymore without Rob.
It's not. I'll agree with that 100%.
But, you know, will Enduro come? And it's so hard. It's so hard to video those things. It's very hard to capture the essence of mountain bike. It's very hard to do that. And hopefully we get somebody that does a documentary series that's a little bit more mainstream. It's not all about, you know, kind of, I don't know, lack of a better word, jackass-ish. You know, it's because a lot of the stuff that hit some of the videos way back when was just people being idiots. Fun, funny, great to watch, but really, truly get into some of the stories behind these people. I mean, you know, what some of these racers and the backgrounds that they have and the struggles that they have to actually race their mountain bikes across the country or across the world. I mean, that's some pretty cool. They have a lot of sacrifices to do that. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe the guys that I'm talking to, maybe we'll pick something up and try to do that. But no, I love the idea. And on a small scale, that's what I'm on the precipice of doing. I'm trying to get more cinematic advertising for mountain bike places and really capture the human, capture the faces and capture the human elements of mountain biking. And why are our sports not great? Because you can hit a 50-foot tabletop. Our sport's great because people are smiling and having fun. And so we try to capture that on a clip, on a video.
Oh, for sure. And it's all ages and abilities. I mean, it spans generations.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, I think the image of mountain biking a lot of times to the general public is Red Bull Rampage. And unfortunately, Red Bull Rampage is like a fraction of a percent of what mountain bikers really are and do. It's awesome.
Yes.
I'm not knocking it. But it's like really not, I mean, it's not what's under the main bell curve of what a mountain biker is or what mountain biking is.
Man, it's about getting coffee before the ride. It's about bringing the whole family out. And that's what I love about the modern design of mountain bike trails is that three different levels can go down the same trail and they can roll things and then they can double things and then the pro guys can triple things. And putting the thoughtfulness into that, that's what the essence of mountain biking is really having the family experience on the same trails.
For sure. And this place probably is on your radar and a place to go. And it's definitely on my super short list of places to go. I don't know how I'm going to pull it off, but I'm going to figure it out. And that is Tasmania. So I don't know if you've been paying attention to what's, you know, maybe you have, maybe you haven't paid attention to like Blue Derby in Tasmania or Medina Bike Park. And I mean, they just have some incredible stuff. And Glenn Jacobs, like right after you and I had met, Glenn Jacobs, who is behind World Trail, and they built out Blue Derby in Tasmania and a lot of other notable places, both in Australia and in Europe, was the keynote speaker at that Professional Trail Builders Conference. And he hit on exactly what you just hit on, and that is having all abilities on the same trail many times throughout his talk.
I think that is the key, and I'm so glad everybody's starting to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And it gives the people that are only riding the green section of that trail, it gives them a way to see how they can progress to the blue section and to the black section, and it gives them something to aspire to.
Absolutely. And you know, probably 1, 2, 3, 4%. I mean, a very low amount is hitting black and double black. And then, you know, you probably got about the same 5 to 10% that's hitting the true green, green, green stuff. So if you're designing them for that core, which is blue, green, blue, probably, I would say is that's the majority of mountain bikers. And to be able to design trails, to be able to accommodate those folks and invite those folks in, because, you know, people don't just start off as black riders. I mean, they were a green rider at one time. And so making that fun and having a trail that, you know, a green rider can watch somebody triple a feature is it's awesome to see that. And I'm so glad people are designing trails for that.
For sure. Well, Toby, do you have any thank yous or closing comments or anything that we didn't actually hit on that you wanted to bring up before we wrap this one up?
You know, I mean, and I'm going to forget 1,000 people, of course, but man, there are so many people that helped push mountain biking and push Bogachita. And of course, I mean, Preston, Steve Scuderi, who works, and all the volunteers and the volunteer base, and Matt and the Norbo crew, you know, Chris and Jeff and Patrick. I mean, the dedication that the Norbo crew has to be able to organize the fundraising, organize the events, and organize all that, you know, all of those volunteer organizations across the country, man, thanks for doing what you're doing. And don't get discouraged, because yeah, I know it gets hard and you won't get thanked as much as you should, but man, you're making a difference, and you know, keep doing that. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't thank my family. My family puts up with a lot. I'm involved in a lot, and they still love me. I spend quality time with them. I'm about to go visit them right now. We're going to go to the next city that we're going with. But Missy and Carter, love you, and thank you so much for doing, for putting up with me and allowing me to do what I can, and allow me to do what I do. And Josh, man, thanks for you for putting this together in your podcast. It's a lot of great information. I've been listening to your podcast, and very, very interesting. And man, keep doing it. And thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Cause I mean, that's the whole reason why we do it, is to share that information with everybody so we can selfishly and selflessly get more awesome places to ride.
Oh my, we are in the golden age of mountain biking, is something that I say. And it's because of folks like you and Preston and all the volunteers that are making that happen.
Yeah. Well, Toby, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day, and that you're able to fit this in after your great ride in Walden's Ridge and everything that you have going on in Chattanooga before you travel on to your next destination.
Oh, Josh, I appreciate it, brother. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please take the time to share these shows with others. Sharing these shows will help create awareness of both the guests who have taken the time to be on the show and the podcast series itself. Also, if you're new to the Trail Effect podcast, check out our ever-expanding library of episodes. If you listen to the Trail Effect podcast on Apple or Spotify, please don't forget to leave a rating and review, as this is one of the best ways to show our support for the Trail Effect podcast. Also, don't forget to check out Cooley Creative at www.dojustsendit.com. For additional ways to help support the Trail Effect podcast, check out the affiliate links tab at the Trail Effect website, where you'll find links to Kettle Mountain Apparel, Worldwide Cyclery, and Trail One Components. By using the affiliate links found at www.traileffectpodcast.com, a small commission will come back to the podcast, which will help keep this thing going. This podcast has been edited and produced by Evolution Trail Services. Thank you again for listening.